In our first story, Behind Mansion Walls.
They both came from wealthy upbringings. They played lacrosse.
How did the perfect campus couple...
Let me go!
I'm going anywhere!
...graduate to murder?
I just looked at George and I told him, I said, well, Yardley's dead.
And later, she was a gorgeous model.
Beautiful blue eyes and this lovely blonde hair.
He was a playboy who played dirty.
I'm going to take you down. I'm going to kill you.
I'm Christopher Mason. Most parents will tell you children need firm boundaries. But what if those boundaries are defined merely by mansion walls? Beware the rich brats who always get their way. Their truculent demands can turn deadly when they're spoiled rotten.
For the children of America's wealthy elite, the path to adulthood usually includes an important stop. A prestigious university. For a blue chip degree. And the contacts to build another generation of riches. Of course, in this rarefied atmosphere...
Yardley? You okay?
She went into the room and something seemed amiss.
No one expects to be pulled back to Earth.
There was so much violence, and the drinking was so out of control.
By the bloody hand of murder.
I knew this was not a normal homicide that we typically respond to.
Lacrosse is a sport that values speed and agility, almost as much as it values wealth and pedigree.
Lacrosse is incredibly elite. It's an expensive sport to play, so it's definitely an upper crust kind of sport.
It's a game for the rich, played at exclusive colleges.
The University of Virginia is a very prestigious school. It's a powerhouse when it comes to athletics too, especially lacrosse.
In 2010, one of the stars of the UVA lacrosse team is 22-year-old Yardley Love. Graduation is just weeks away, and her team is the favorite to take the national championships.
In both high school and college, she got to wear the number one, so it was always one for Love.
The petite defender is a standout, on and off the field.
Yardley was an adorable girl. She had these piercing blue eyes, and she was just bubbly and full of life. And athletic and gorgeous. She turned heads.
The University of Virginia senior seems to have it all. Pretty, popular, and born into a life of privilege.
She definitely grew up with a lot of money. Her father was very successful.
But Yardley is no rich princess.
She especially was known as being very humble and modest and giving. She volunteered a lot in the community. So she didn't seem to really let her privilege go to her head.
The icing on the cake is her college sweetheart.
He was about 6'2", 200 and some pounds, really athletic, very attractive.
Burly All-American lacrosse star George Hughley.
George and Yardley hit it off right away. They had a lot in common. They both came from wealthy upbringings. They played lacrosse.
He's not just George Hughley. He's George Hughley, the fifth. And he comes from very old money.
One of his grandfathers had actually started a building company that helped build Washington, D.C. He had money. He could get anything that he wanted from his parents. For people looking at George from the outside, he looked like he had a perfect life.
The heir to the Hughley fortune grows up with a sense of privilege. What George wants, George gets.
if he wanted something, his parents could surely afford it. And if he threw a big enough fit, it seemed like they did.
On the first Saturday in May 2010, Yardley Love is out celebrating with a roommate.
There was a lot to celebrate right then. They were getting ready to graduate. Yardley had gotten a word that she was going to be hired at a firm in New York.
To the Big Apple.
Big Apple.
The political science student is excited about taking the next big step in her life.
But at some point, Yardley decided she wanted to go home. The friend walked her there and went back out.
A few hours later, her roommate returns.
Yardley? You okay?
Yardley seems to have passed out in bed.
So she came forward, touched Yardley on the shoulder, and Yardley didn't respond.
Yardley isn't breathing.
Call 911!
Another college student who drank too much. Sadly, it's a scene repeated across America.
A 911 call came in that a female victim may have been the victim of an alcohol overdose.
Detective Lisa Reeves is one of the officers to respond to the 911 call.
When I first walked into Yardley's room, the first thing I noticed was the large hole in her bedroom door.
It only takes one look for the detective to realize this is no simple case of alcohol poisoning.
She had a lot of bruising around her side of her face. She had blood coming out of her mouth, out of her nose. The side of her right eye was swollen so badly that it was completely shut. It didn't even look like an eye. It was very evident that she was a victim of a homicide.
Detective Reeves notices something else.
A computer case laying nearby where it was pretty evident a computer should have been. So I didn't note that that was missing.
Yardley Love has been brutally attacked and robbed.
They knew that there was blood there, so something beyond alcohol poisoning had happened, but they didn't really know what they were dealing with yet.
As the student body mourns the loss of a much-loved friend, dark thoughts lurk in the background. Is there a killer loose on the grounds? And where will they strike next?
For wealthy young Americans, attending an elite college means more than just getting a degree. It's a place to forge alliances and make powerful friends, to ensure you scamper up the social ladder rather than taking a perilous slide down. But what if one of those useful new friends turns out to be a snake with a deadly bite?
Yardley Love and George Hughley seem like the it couple at the University of Virginia. But their close friends know this is a very rocky relationship.
They had this volatile relationship where they would fight and get angry at each other over allegations of cheating, and they just seemed to feed off of that.
That jealousy came to a head just days before Yardley's death.
Yardley found out that George was cohorting with some high school lacrosse recruits.
Are these the girls you've been texting?
How old are they, like 15?
They're not 15. Yardley, come and sit down.
They look 15.
She became very upset by this news and confronted him in his apartment, threw her purse at him. The contents spilled everywhere.
It really angered George that Yardley had embarrassed him in front of these girls that were in his apartment.
Embarrassing George Hughley can have dangerous results.
George had a problem with alcohol, and when he drank, his temper would come out.
But would he turn his rage on Yardley Love herself?
Not going.
I'm gonna go. Bye.
No.
About 2 months before Yardley's death, George attacked her. He choked her. He was upset because he had heard that she was seeing somebody else, and he became very violent, so violent that other lacrosse players from a different team had to intervene.
We were just playing.
That wasn't just playing.
It's not a big deal.
It's him again. Look at this email he sent.
Her family and friends urge her to call police.
You should go to the cops.
I'm going to.
Yardley is reluctant. She thinks she'll be free of George's stormy temper once they graduate.
Cheers to that.
But she does decide to end what's become a dangerous relationship.
I think at this point, Yardley knew that George was really unstable and unhealthy and clearly bad for her. There was no question that she needed to end the relationship, so she broke up with him.
The handsome heir, used to getting whatever he wants, can't handle a pretty girl's rejection.
He became obsessive. He had always been controlling. He would send text messages to keep tabs on where she was, but the text messages began to increase and the emails became more violent.
On the morning Yardley Love is found dead, George Hughley is asked to come for a ride downtown to police headquarters in Charlottesville, Virginia. Detective Lisa Reeves knows he was Yardley's boyfriend. And she has some routine questions.
Perhaps maybe he had seen her last. If he wasn't involved, hopefully he could clear up some stuff for us.
One thing is quickly clear. George had a very big Sunday night.
I'd say a good description of him was that he looked hungover. I could smell alcohol coming about his person.
Detective Reeves keeps one piece of information to herself. Yardley Love is dead.
At the very beginning of my interview with George, he stated that he knew that this was over Yardley and an incident that had occurred the night prior. I continued to ask him, what had happened. He proceeded to tell me that he had been to a golf tournament earlier in the day with his father, and that he had been drinking very heavily. He said that later in the night, after he had went home, he decided to walk over to Yardley's apartment to talk to her.
The couple would soon be living on different sides of the country. Yardley had called time on their relationship. George wanted to talk it over.
He wanted to iron out their problems and get this whole mess situated, that he just wanted to talk to her. He had at one point stated that when Yardley was sitting on the bed that she was saying no, 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 and he actually imitated how she was actually banging her own head against the wall. In George's version, he was there, he talked to Yardley, she got upset, and he left.
But George's version of his Sunday night visit doesn't ring true.
He said that once he got there and went to her bedroom door and knocked, he said that Yardley had got up and said, "Who is it?" He said, "It's George." And he said that she let him in the bedroom. I knew right then and there that was not the case because I had already been seen and saw the hole in the door.
Go away, please!
I knew he was minimizing what he had done.
George also has some unusual injuries.
During the course of my interview with George, I did ask him.
I had to get that scratch on your arm.
Got to play in lacrosse.
Then Detective Reeves plays her ace.
So at that point, I just looked at George and I told him, I said, "Well, Yardley's dead." He just had a blank stare. And he said, "She's dead?"
Yeah, she's dead.
And he said again, "She's dead." And that we kind of went back and forth for a moment, and he just sat there in a stare.
At that point, George Hughley V is cuffed and charged with murder. This was no robbery. But what actually happened in Yardley Love's bedroom? And why? The autopsy toxicology results give one answer. They confirm Yardley had taken both alcohol and prescription drugs.
But neither one was to the extent that it would cause a death.
This is no overdose. The pretty college student with such a bright future was the victim of a brutal attack.
There was no mistaking what had happened, that she was severely beaten.
No, please!
On a warm spring evening in 2010, the University of Virginia is in mourning for Yardley Love. Through their tears at a candlelight vigil, friends and classmates just want to know why. Why did a girl so full of life have to die so soon?
When you look back at the case, there were so many red flags. There was so much violence, and the drinking was so out of control.
Go away!
George Hughley V was the last person to see Yardley the night she died. He tells police she must have mixed too much alcohol and medication.
Yardley had perhaps suffocated in her pillow because she was drunk.
The autopsy results point to a very different scenario.
Yardley had severe bruising on the front and the back of her brain, which indicated she had been severely shaken.
The cause of death is written in three stark words: blunt force trauma.
Her injuries look like somebody with fist had beat her in the face.
Police believe that fist belongs to George Hughley. February 2012. America watches as a son of the elite goes on trial for murder.
He was privileged and wealthy, and people don't come from that kind of background and kill people.
The jury soon hears that George has a history of drunken violence. In 2008, Hughley was arrested for being drunk and disorderly in nearby Lexington.
He was also spewing racial slurs and sexist remarks. It was really a violent encounter that the officer said she'd never experienced before.
The stories of George's violent ways become more disturbing as they get closer to Yardley Love.
One of Yardley's teammates walked her home one night, and word got around that he might have moved in for a kiss.
Enraged, George pays the athlete a late-night visit.
The teammates said that he was awakened by George on top of him, punching him. He said that that's really all he could remember, because during the assault, he was actually knocked out.
There are other stories of George's brat behavior.
At first times.
Including the time he was sailing in Florida on his family's 40-foot yacht.
Apparently one day when the family was out on the real deal, their yacht, he decided that he wanted to go back to the beach, so he asked his father to turn the boat around.
His father says no.
George apparently didn't like this and decided to jump off the boat and swim the quarter mile to shore. It definitely, in hindsight, piques some questions as to just how entitled this boy must have felt.
The prosecution tells the story of Yardley Love's last day alive. By mid-morning, George is already drinking.
The drinking continued all day. It was fueling his anger. He was seen at a party, throwing bottles, talking about Yardley.
Late that evening, George's notorious temper takes over.
Open the door!
Please, I don't
want you. Open the door!
No! Stop it! Go!
Furious at being dumped, jealous of her with other men, the heir decides to confront Yardley.
Please, no! Please, no!
I think that George was a young man who had always gotten everything he wanted, and at that point, he wanted Yardley.
I think that he immediately attacked her,
no!
And I think that it got out of control very quickly.
He shook her violently, smashed her head against a wall.
The 200-pound champion athlete unleashes tremendous violence.
Please.
He saw blood pouring out of her nose.
happening.
Threw her on her bed and left.
He admitted that the last time he looked at Yardley is when he tossed her, in his own words, tossed her onto her bed. And that was where she was found dead. So it's pretty clear she never moved after he tossed her onto the bed.
As he leaves, George snatches Yardley's laptop.
There were emails there that were obviously incriminating, and he wanted to get rid of that evidence.
Most damning of all is an email he sent just 2 days before. After hearing she had seen another guy.
He had sent an email, "I should have killed you," and ultimately the next time he saw her, he did kill her.
The defense argues Georgie was just a stupid drunk who thought he'd left his girlfriend with a nosebleed. The jury doesn't buy it. George Hughley is found guilty of second-degree murder. He is later sentenced to 23 years in prison. His world of privilege had set him up for a terrible fall.
He was so used to getting everything that he wanted that it fueled this unhealthy sense of entitlement within him.
George Hughley's only regret is the shame he's brought to his once proud family name.
I think that he started crying at the moment that he realized that he's in a lot of trouble. But the news that George got when I told him that Yardley was dead, I saw no tears. The most affected by this case is obviously Yardley's family. Although George is, you know, in prison and serving a sentence, it's not enough, and it will never be enough to take away their pain that they're going to feel forever.
Yardley's family sets up the One Love Foundation to highlight the problem of relationship violence.
After Yardley died, her family really put their focus on trying to make sure that it wasn't in vain. They started the One Love Foundation, playing off the number one jersey that Yardley always wore. There's a belief in higher society that domestic violence doesn't happen to them. I think in the end, this case shed light on the fact that it can actually happen to anyone. Even somebody as unlikely a victim as Yardley Love.
How many of you observe the charmed lives of the rich and long to join their ranks? Be careful what you wish for. And take heed of this next tale from the glitterati of Great Britain. It begins with a sleeping beauty. But this fairy tale rapidly turns to tragedy.
In a house by the English seaside.
Emily?
A beautiful young girl lies resting, perhaps dreaming of a rich life ahead. Only this is much more than a deep sleep.
It was actually quite shocking.
It's my son's girlfriend. She won't wake up. She stopped breathing.
No one will be able to wake this beauty.
It really was a mystery.
Emily had gone to sleep and had never woken up.
From childhood, Emily Longley was destined to join the glamorous world of modeling.
Right from the minute she was born, people commented on what a beautiful girl she was, and that continued throughout her life. She had beautiful blue eyes and this lovely blonde hair, and she was very natural looking.
In 2010, the 17-year-old from New Zealand moves to Britain to study and maybe get a crack at the big time.
You really, yeah, got a sense of this young, quite sophisticated woman setting up a new life on the far side of the world. So much promise.
Emily lives with her grandparents in the coastal resort town of Bournemouth. She soon catches the eye of a local millionaire's son.
She was a very photogenic and a very attractive girl, and that's what attracted Turner to her.
20-year-old Elliot Turner is a self-styled hotshot playboy.
He had a very flash lifestyle, seemed to spend a lot of money going out drinking at the weekends.
Kiko.
Elliot is the kingpin in a posse of cashed-up playboys.
The Bentley's barmaids and bows.
He talked about his friends being members of a firm, which is kind of a British slang term for a gang. Well, they consider themselves the bright young things of Bournemouth, really.
The firm has a nickname for their silver-tongued ringleader, All Talk Turner.
He really was a man who said he'd done it all. He said that he'd slept with reality TV stars, been in rehab for cocaine. You know, there was no end to Turner's tales.
Young and beautiful, 17-year-old Emily is soon swept up into Elliot's flashy world.
He could be charming, Elliot Turner. There's no doubt about that. In the early days, they were clearly attracted to each other.
Have a little nip.
He seemed to spend time with people that were just a little bit younger, maybe a little bit more impressionable, and a little bit more impressed with his free-spending, heavy-drinking ways.
If anyone's born with a silver spoon in his mouth, it's Elliot Turner. His grandparents are millionaire silversmiths. His parents, Lee and Anita, own a high-class jewelry store. And they will do anything for their Elliot.
It was quite clear that both parents doted on and were manipulated by Elliot Turner. He went to them for cash, for the easy life.
Basically a stream of money that seemed to fund a lifestyle that was beyond the reach of most people.
In a few short weeks, love blossoms between Elliot and Emily. The rich heir talks of proposing over dinner at the Ritz Hotel. Turner woos Emily with expensive gifts.
Attractive young woman, guy that's a little bit older, seems to have some cash, seems to have a winning way and a bit of charm and a few friends, and he's showing her the town, if you like.
A beautiful future seems to beckon the pair. But before an engagement ring can appear, a coffin will be required.
17-year-old girls do not die in beds. They don't just not wake up.
Run down the checklist of a teenage girl's dreams. International model, millionaire boyfriend, a champagne life of glamorous parties. 17-year-old Emily Longley has ticked all the boxes, but she has also made a terrible mistake, and it will cost her life.
It's the morning of May 7th, 2011. In his parents' luxury home, Elliot Turner wakes after a big night out. As he leaves for work, he lets Emily Longley, his sleeping beauty, enjoy her rest.
He claimed he'd woken and found her sleeping heavily, got up, got ready to go off to work on a Saturday morning.
Emily.
A few hours later, Elliot's mother goes to wake her.
Emily.
Anita Turner knows the young girl is a heavy sleeper. But when she tries again, Emily is cold to the touch.
It's not immediately clear exactly what's happened to this young woman.
She said that there was a girl. She thought she was asleep. She couldn't wake her up.
Ambulance emergency. What's the address of the emergency, please?
It's my son's girlfriend. She won't wake up. She stopped breathing.
Emily is beyond help. She has been dead for hours.
Well, this was quite a mysterious death. I mean, it's in a pretty well-to-do part of Bournemouth.
17-year-old girls do not die in beds. They don't just not wake up.
It's 2 a.m. Sunday across the world in New Zealand. Phone calls at this time of night only bring bad news. Emily Longley's father, Mark, can't believe what he hears.
This policeman told me what had happened. Basically, Emily was dead, and I thought, no, she can't be. I'd seen her a week before. She'd been in New Zealand, and she was just fit and bright and healthy and happy.
His beautiful 17-year-old daughter, Emily, dead. Mark flies halfway around the world, still in shock.
So I landed and I went straight from the airport to the morgue. I went to the room and she just looked like she was asleep. Yeah, I thought she's going to open her eyes in a minute and just say boo to me, and then she's going to laugh at this big trick that forced me to fly over to England, and then she didn't, and she was cold, and it still took a long time to sink in.
The initial post-mortem results draw a blank.
Part of the mystery was that it wasn't clear what had killed Emily Longley. There were no marks on her. So the police knew that they had their work cut out for them.
In the absence of facts about Emily's death, speculation takes hold.
There was talk of her taking drugs. There was a lot of speculation about that.
There was talk of sudden death syndrome or just dying in her sleep.
Or could the culprit be one of the expensive trinkets Elliot Turner draped around Emily's neck? His mother, Anita, mentioned the necklace to the 911 operator.
She's got anything around her neck?
Anything around her neck? Oh, that's a necklace. No, she's got a necklace very tight.
Very tight around her neck?
Yeah.
Can you get that necklace off?
Okay.
How tight?
Very, very tight.
Then the toxicology report comes back. Emily was clean.
The toxicology report came back about a week later and that ruled out drugs. There had been reports there was a drug overdose and Emily was this crazy wild child who got in with a bad crowd, and it was all rubbish.
Detectives take another path and conduct a digital autopsy. And there on Emily's Facebook page is a chilling post. I have a stalker.
Emily had put a post on that some guy had been calling my parents' house where Emily was living and had been saying things like, I know you're there.
That message was written just 2 days before her death. A beauty like Emily will always stand out in a crowd. So who took notice? When police look at CCTV of Emily's final night in the town, only one man stands out, Elliot Turner.
The pictures, though, show a lot of toing and froing. They show Emily Longley arriving at the club, arriving not with Turner, but separately. They're not a happy couple, obviously.
Certainly on the CCTV footage that we saw, he looked very angry.
It was stuff that showed that Emily really wanted to get away from Turner that night. The atmosphere in the bar was poisonous between them.
Elliot Turner sees it differently.
They'd gone out for the night. They had argued, but that there had been a make-up.
The problem is that for Elliot Turner, making up is hard to do. His playboy charm is paper thin.
He was a mix of very obsessive, very jealous, very possessive and controlling.
Emily Longley is just another accessory in a rich man's wardrobe.
He seemed to treat her like just a Facebook photo, an attractive young woman that he could have up there for the world to look at and say, oh, well, you must be some sort of success because of who you're with.
When Emily does a photo shoot with two beefy male models, Turner fumes.
Buff Butlers, it was called, and it was like all these sort of hunky men dressed like in, just a bow tie, really, and a pair of shorts. He was absolutely furious. He was extremely upset.
Forever spoiled, the indulged heir is used to getting whatever he wants.
This and this.
It's my outfit.
You're dressed like a...
Nothing fuels his rage like a woman saying no.
He he had form with this obsession, with control, and being extraordinarily upset when women didn't want him anymore.
What?
One former girlfriend went to the police, and he was cautioned that he shouldn't go near her. So there was a bit of a pattern there that he'd talked in the past about using violence to control women that wouldn't do what he said.
And 17-year-old Emily is beginning to feel that violent streak.
He never called her Emily. All the text messages were or
police find a letter from Emily.
I love you.
Begging him to stop.
Stop being so constantly aggressive.
She'd written him a note saying, I love you, but don't say you're going to kill me. Stop being so constantly aggressive to me.
Don't say you'll kill me.
Then she tries to break up with him.
It seemed pretty clear that Emily Longley was getting rid of this guy.
He went from being verbally violent to Emily to being physically violent towards her, and there are accounts of him hitting her in a bar and holding her by her neck in a nightclub.
The night before Emily's death...
You can say it. What happened?
Elliot shows up at a nightclub with a hammer.
And Emily.
Hit her in the head with this. He'd even bragged that he'd killed her with a lump hammer and then said it was just a joke.
It's not real.
You're right off your head, mate. You know that? Off your head.
He was heard talking about how angry he was with Emily Longley and how he could kill her. And he'd do 10 years and get out and he'd still be a millionaire. So clearly he felt untouchable.
But a lot of talk isn't enough to send someone to prison.
So the police had a problem. They had strong suspicions. They had a young guy that didn't seem to be frank with them. An unexplained death, but no real evidence of how this young woman has died.
Elliot Turner's devoted parents stand by their son, even as the arrogant playboy taunts Emily's grieving family.
We were hearing reports that he was out clubbing and he was saying things like, my bird's dead, I'm a free man again now.
To Bentley's barmaids and
guns. As Emily's father, I was just appalled that he could behave this way.
Desperate for a breakthrough, detectives turned to tactics they normally reserve for terrorists.
They decided that they were going to bug the house and find out what was being said.
What these detectives hear in that living room will break these mansion walls wide open.
Those tapes were really damning evidence.
In the English seaside town of Bournemouth, a stakeout is underway. The police aren't hunting terrorists or even gangsters.
I don't know. She just kept pressuring,
and before
it's not his fault.
They are listening in on Elliot Turner and his parents.
I just lost it. I grabbed her as hard as I could.
Millionaires suspected of murder.
They picked up just hours and hours and hours of conversation and confession.
Police believe Elliot Turner has killed his model girlfriend, Emily Longley. Now they have the proof.
Turner saying that he had lost it. He'd never been that angry and he just lost it.
I just slipped. I went absolutely nuts. I've never in my whole life ever got to that point.
In more than 2 months of bugging the Turner house, detectives hear the whole sorry tale of murder, cover-up, and denial.
It was very, very, very damning evidence against all three of them.
On the day of Emily's death, Elliot writes a note and packs his bag.
He had his passport in his back pocket and was on the point of driving off to Spain, apparently.
But his wealthy parents, Lee and Anita Turner, have other ideas.
They destroyed a confession that he'd written. Father got rid of it.
and the police have their cover-up caught on tape.
We've destroyed vital evidence in this case. You think we're right?
Yeah.
Conversations between Turner's father, Lee, and mother, Anita, about whether they should cover it up and whether they should lie to the police.
There was destroyed vital evidence. We've perverted the course of justice. That was a confession.
And Anita Turner has heard telling her husband, well, what should we do? You know, he'll be going to jail otherwise.
I'm stuck denying me now.
I am denying me.
You f***ing scroller.
Perhaps the most galling comment of all, Elliot blaming the girl he killed for all his troubles.
That girl has ruined my life. Yeah, she has ruined my life.
She did ruin your life.
The police have heard enough. Elliot Turner is charged with murder. His parents with perverting the course of justice. The English are horrified.
It was a case that was compelling to so many people because really Emily Longley could have been anyone's daughter.
Awaiting trial, Elliot shows no remorse. Only the brash attitude of a rich brat dreaming of book and movie deals.
While he was on remand, he was writing letters saying that he was going to come out and his father was going to buy him a Porsche and he was going to have a huge party. And
he just didn't believe that he was going to go down for his crime at any point. It wasn't part of the film that he was making in his mind.
But the police are working from a different script. As the murder trial begins, the prosecution describes the night of May 6, 2011. During the evening, Turner follows Emily and her friends into a swanky bar.
Emily was over him and leaving him, and he didn't like that one bit. And he seemed to think that if he couldn't have her, no one could.
This and this?
It's my outfit.
And he called it a and he was extremely angry.
And here he'd finally met someone that was standing up to him that wasn't going to be treated like that. Said no for the first time.
It's the last images we've got of Emily leaving this bar, and she walks out. Turner follows her.
Turner entices her back to his parents' home. There, he loses all control.
You're a control freak.
Don't you answer me back, okay?
You're hurting me!
Elliot Turner overpowered Emily Longley. Had essentially choked her to death.
Another man put his hands on Emily's neck and hit her or verbally abused her or upset her. It's just, you know, it's deeply upsetting. When I think of it, I just feel so sad for Emily that she had to endure that.
Elliot Turner does not act alone in this murder. His parents quickly try to protect their golden boy.
Anita Turner didn't call the ambulance for a good hour after discovering Emily's body.
It's my son's girlfriend. She won't wake up. She stopped breathing.
They're trying to grasp some way to try and get him off the hook. And all these things are happening and nothing's being done to help Emily.
Not only has Turner murdered her, but they've left her cold body lying on this bed while they try and get out of it. I mean, she didn't deserve that.
The jury also hears of a terrible piece of evidence discovered by police. On the pillow in Emily's deathbed was an image of her face, created when Elliot smothered her.
You could tell it was Emily's eyelashes. She had these lovely long eyelashes, and it was like looking at a makeup picture of Emily's face.
On trial, Elliot claims he acted in self-defense. Even his own defense lawyer labels him brash, flash, and spoiled.
He gave no indication throughout his entire evidence that he cared one jot that she had died.
The jury cares. They care a lot for the innocent 17-year-old Emily Longley.
It was a unanimous decision by the jury.
Elliot Turner is found guilty of murder.
So Elliot Turner was given a life sentence 16 years before he's eligible for parole. The judge, when she sentenced him, really put it all back down to earth and said, well, you know, you can put aside your thoughts of champagne and Bentleys and you can think about what you've done.
I think everybody just felt for Emily that she'd had to endure this horrific behaviour from this clearly twisted and deranged man.
Turner's wealthy parents, Anita and Lee, are convicted of attempting to pervert the course of justice.
And were jailed for 27 months each for basically attempting to cover up their son's murder.
He was just spoiled rotten and allowed to indulge these fantasies and never told no. And the only person that ever said no and meant it was this pretty vulnerable young woman.
Mark Longley is left with justice done, but no daughter.
You've constantly got that. She's just missing from your lives, and she was such a force in everyone's lives. You know, she was such a presence in all our lives that she's just so deeply, deeply missed.
These indulged offspring refused to take no for an answer and paid the ultimate price for their petulance. George Hughley V unleashed a murderous rage when he couldn't get what he wanted. And pampered English playboy Elliot Turner murdered a beautiful girl when she dared to defy him. At birth, a glorious future seemed inevitable. Then wealth and privilege corrupted their hearts, and they were spoiled rotten. Till next we meet, behind Mansion Walls, I'm Christopher Mason.